It's What's New from WBAA Classical and WBAA.org. I'm John Clare. Actor Edmund Gwynn, Kris Kringle from Miracle on 34th Street, supposedly said on his deathbed, "Yes, dying is tough, but not as tough as comedy." We'll hear from master comedian and composer Peter Schickele on today's What's New. You might know Peter Schickele from his former radio show, Schickele Mix, that was on public radio stations around the country. He was born in Ames, Iowa on July 17, 1935. He grew up in North Dakota and studied music at Juilliard. He celebrated 50 years of P.D.Q. Bach in December 2015, and in September 2016, the world premiere of P.D.Q. Bach's Concerto for Very Grand Piano takes place. I asked Peter Schickele about another concerto, his Pentangle for Horn and Orchestra.
Well, many years ago, I guess it was probably in the 70s, I got to know a horn player in the Detroit Symphony named Tom Bacon. And he and some other guys in the Detroit Symphony had a sort of an alternative rock group called Metamorphosis. And they were all guys who liked to do different things, not just sort of a straight and narrow classical music. And Tom got the money together to commission a horn concerto from me, and he told me, "I don't want just a regular horn concerto. I want something that's sort of off the wall." And so the first three movements are fairly straightforward, although they certainly have a whole lot of influence of from folk and rock. One of the influences I feel particularly strongly in the second movement is that of a group called Fairport Convention that I was a big fan of. But then in the fourth movement, Tom and I had gone to magic shops and sort of seen what you could do with a French horn in terms of magic. And so in the fourth movement, and of course this doesn't come across in the recording, in the fourth movement he tries to play a note, a sustained note, and he has trouble playing it. And then he pulls flowers out of the bell. Okay? So he thinks that's the problem. Maybe he tries to play it again, and this time he looks and he pulls a scarf out of his mouthpiece. I think we had a chicken in there somewhere. I can't remember exactly how the chicken was used, but as I say, this is something that comes across fully only in live performances. And then in the last movement, he also wrote songs. I mean, he'd go to clubs and sing his own songs. And so the last movement is based in terms of the lyrics on an old English ballad. I wrote a new tune for it, and Tom sang it at the premiere. The recording was made by the Louisville Orchestra, and their first horn player sang it. And one thing I regret is that in the liner notes, I didn't explain that the horn player is singing, because my idea was that it not sound like a polished singer. But if you don't know who's singing it, some people think I'm singing it. But the idea was just to have a horn concerto that had some stuff in it that wasn't your usual horn concerto.
Peter Schickele discussing Pentangle, five songs for horn and orchestra. Let's hear Kenneth Albrecht with the Louisville Orchestra, conducted by George Mester, on What's New. Kenneth Albrecht playing horn and singing in that last movement in Peter Schickele's Pentangle for Horn and Orchestra. George Mester led the Louisville Orchestra on What's New. Find out more at WBAA.org, including playlist and podcast. That's WBAA.org. I didn't realize all the hijinks in Pentangle. That's great.
Yeah, it was great. And it got me into the kind of trouble, and Tom, that my pieces often do, which is that conductors listen to the piece and they say, "Well, it's too serious for a Pops concert and it's too humorous for a subscription concert." So a lot of my stuff seems to fall in the cracks there.
Damned if you do and damned if you don't, right?
Right. Well, it's always bothered me that people accept novels and plays that are basically serious but have comic scenes in them. But in classical music, a lot of people feel it's got to be either serious or funny, and preferably serious.
I was curious of what inspires Peter Schickele. Is it literature, other music, musicians? What makes you tick?
Well, I think all sorts of things. I like working for specific people. I mean, my earliest pieces when I was a teenager were written for friends and played in living rooms, even though many, if not most of my works are now written on commission. I like to think about who's going to be playing them. I certainly hope in the end that they'll be played by different groups. But, for instance, while I was working on the second quartet, I had a flyer of the Lark Quartet pinned up on the wall next to the piano. It does help inspire me. Otherwise, I think it's so varied, it's hard to know. I mean, I do a lot of composing while driving. Not on throughways, but I live in Woodstock, New York, and I sometimes just drive around on the back roads and get a lot of ideas, which usually I can remember, but once in a while I stop, and I always have some music paper in the car. But as has been pointed out by many composers, it's basically sort of like playing an instrument. You just do it every day. It's not like you go to a lake and sit there until the moonlight hits you just at the right angle, and then you get the great theme. You write every day, and some of it you like, and some of it you don't like, and you hope that it gets shaped. I must say that with me, I've never had the blank page syndrome of starting a piece, like that cliche about a novelist with the first piece of paper in the typewriter. As a matter of fact, if somebody calls me about a commission, very often by the time the phone call is over, I already have some music ideas in my head for the piece. But I can still get very stuck about the piece in the middle of it. It doesn't mean that it all comes that easily. With me, the kind of non-musical associations that I have with a piece very often happen after I write the music, rather than them inspiring the music. And from what I've read, Robert Schumann was often like that he would give the title, these very evocative titles, after he had written the piece. And I certainly don't often, if, matter of fact, usually I think I don't know where a piece is going to go when I start working on it.
Well, you've answered several questions there, because I was going to get around to say, oh, well, do you like to sit at the piano or take the bassoon out and, you know, compose?
Right. So the bassoon I only play for P.D.Q. Bach now. And I also do work at the piano sometimes, too. It just depends on where in the piece I am.
Now, are you a pen and paper man, or have you
not
have
even
you fallen...
pen? I'm a pencil and paper man. I'm a real. I'm not quite a Luddite, because I'm not that way in philosophy. But I am a real low tech guy, and I'm still computer illiterate. I haven't lost my computer virginity yet. So what I do is I write the score just with pencil and paper, and I send it to a copyist. And he puts it on the computer, and of course, with the computer, you get a score in parts that look you used to have to engrave music to get it to look that good.
Here's another piece that Schickele wrote for Tom Bacon, a work for French horn and piano called "What Did You Do Today at Jeffy's House?" Leslie Norton, French horn, and Melissa Rowe, piano, played "What Did You Do Today at Jeffy's House?", a work from 1988 by Peter Schickele. I'm John Clare. Find out more about this show and find playlists and podcasts at WBAA.org. I spoke to Peter Schickele about writing as P.D.Q. Bach and as Peter Schickele.
Well, you know, it's no problem for me in terms of headset. As a matter of fact, I have to admit that sometimes there are a few sketches in my sketchbooks that I wasn't sure whether they were going to be P.D.Q. Bach pieces or a new discovery of P.D.Q. Bach or a Peter Schickele piece. To me, it's all sort of a continuum. I actually regard the sort of secret ingredient of P.D.Q. Bach as trying to make the music itself worth hearing more than once, in addition to the gags. And similarly, as I've said, there's often a lot of humor in my so-called serious music. And one interesting example of really mixing the two was that in my Serenade for Three for clarinet, violin, and piano, the last movement I did something I had never done before, which is Peter Schickele writing variations on a theme by P.G. Bach. Peter Schickele writing variations on a theme by P.D. Bach. It's a theme from P.D. Bach's oratorio, Oedipus Tex.
Howdy there, I'm Oedipus Tex. You may have heard of my brother Rex. Yeah, I'm Oedipus Tex, that's what I said. But my friends just call me Ed.
And I wrote variations on it that are, they're all sorts. I mean, there's a sort of a fiddle tune part. And there's a boogie-woogie part. But it has nothing to do with the 18th century.
But you know, I kind of like this town. I think I'll find me a woman and settle down. Good folks and plenty of space. Besides, it's nice to be in a place where everybody knows old Oedipus Tex, the brother of the legendary Rex. Yeah, I'm Oedipus Tex, that's what I said. But you know, my friends just call me Ed.
The main problem I've had sometimes is that a lot of people don't even know that I write serious music. That's less true now than it was 25 years ago. But so some people, if they see my name, assume that it's going to be P.D.Q. Bach. And I think if I had it all to do over again, the only thing I would do different is to use a funny, phony name for the professor who discovers P.D.Q. Bach's music. Just not as a secret, not trying to camouflage the identity, but just as a sort of a signpost that this is P.D.Q. Bach and Peter Schickele would be my so-called serious music. As you can tell, I hate that term.
Sure.
I hate it not only because it implies that the music has to be all serious, but it also, it seems to me, is dismissive of all the other great kinds of music, like folk and rock and jazz, that are not included in this usual meaning of serious music.
This is a piano work by Peter Schickele, his second sonatina, played by pianist Laura Leon on What's New. It's a release of piano music by Peter Schickele and P.D.Q. Bach with Laura Leon. We heard the second sonatina on What's New. I asked Peter Schickele about one of my favorite P.D.Q. Bach pieces that he discovered, the Howdy Symphony.
The Howdy Symphony, which is, of course, P.D.Q. Bach's answer to Haydn's Farewell Symphony. It's one of my favorite pieces, just musically, but it is not ideally enjoyed on a record because, as you know, the Haydn Farewell Symphony ends with the players, Haydn and the orchestra, wanting to have a vacation, and so they conveyed that feeling to their employer, Esterhazy, by having this symphony in which the players leave one by one while the piece ends. The music stand lights, of course, were candles. So each individual player would snuff out his candle and walk off the stage, leaving it to be, I'm sure, the only symphony that ends with two solo violins. So PDQ Bach's piece, when you see it in performance, it starts with me or whoever coming out on the stage, getting up on the podium, lifting my baton, tapping the baton to the music stand and getting attention, and then I start conducting with an absolutely empty stage. Nobody's on the stage whatsoever. And after the first 7 or 8 bars, the concertmaster comes in, sits down, and starts playing, and then another, and then another, and then another, until finally the last person to enter is the first oboe, and he enters just in time to play the tuning A. And the piece stops for a few seconds while everybody tunes up their instruments. And that whole entry thing, of course, you can't get on the recording. And then the kicker on that is that during the finale, during the that last section of the finale, the trombonist comes running down the aisle with his overcoat on and his case open and his horn out, as if he's just gotten out of a cab trying to get to the gig in time. And he bounds up onto the stage and goes back there, and he only has the last 3 notes. You'll hear the last 3 notes of the trombone. So it is more than 3 notes. And it's really nice. I love most trombonists really work it out so they're going to be on time and get there just to play time to play standing up those last notes. It's like one of those many decisions we have to make when we record PDQ Bach pieces is what to do about the visual humor.
Yeah, which worked out well with the opera, the Abduction of Figaro.
Yeah, well, these all ought to be DVDs. I mean, and finally, as I'm sure you know, there is finally a DVD out of a PDQ Bach show, a concert, as opposed to the opera, the PDQ Bach in Houston. We have a problem. And so that shows some of what's going on visually.
Let's sample a part of the Howdy Symphony. We'll hear the Andante con Moggio, the Minuetto Allegretto, and the Finale come un pipistrello fiore dall'inferno, like a bat out of hell. Peter Schickele conducted the New York Pickup Ensemble in the second, third, and fourth movements of The Howdy Symphony by PDQ Bach on What's New. Find out more about this show and find playlists and podcasts at WBAA.org. It's What's New from WBAA Classical and WBAA.org. I'm your host, John Clare. Coming up, a rare recording of Peter Schickele's Oboe Concerto. But first, I asked Peter about some of his memories touring as Professor Pete.
But I want to mention one little, I'll give you and your listeners an inside little historical footnote here, which is that when we did the concert in Houston for the Houston DVD, there's one thing I did just because I wanted to get it down for posterity, and that is all. I've been touring now for over 40 years, and I have virtually always made my entrance not only from some surprising place, but usually from some high place. My standard entrance during the 70s and the 80s, my standard entrance was to come down from the balcony on a rope, to slither down a rope to the aisle, and then run down the aisle and belly flop onto the stage and then run over to the lectern to start giving my introductions. It's just a great way to start a concert because it leaves everybody breathless as well as being so out of place for a classical concert. But by the end of the 90s, I was getting to an age where I really couldn't do that very well. I'm not as reckless as people think I am. If I didn't think I was going to be in complete control, I didn't want to do it. So I quit doing those entrances. I still do unusual entrances, but they're not as athletic now. But when we did that Houston tape, I thought, I've just got to come down on a rope, just because that was so much a part of my touring. But on the other hand, you know, I just am not as strong as I used to be. So what we did is we hooked up down a rope. It was a theater in the round, and we hooked the rope into from the one of the balconies areas that came down on the stage. So I came down the rope, slithered down the rope to the stage, and then ran off camera. And what we did is we took that entrance before the audience was there. So just in case I broke my leg or something like that, it wouldn't be in the middle of a concert. And so if you see that videotape, you see me coming down the rope. And as a matter of fact, right towards the very bottom, I actually did lose my grip, and I sort of fall to the floor. No problem. I didn't hurt myself at all. At least that entrance is now preserved for posterity.
It's funny. My parents still talk about that. We saw you in Heston, Kansas, come up and do that. You know, as much as I enjoy the jokes and humor, everyone remembers that.
Right. No, it's like Victor Borger falling off the piano bench. There's one thing that fixes in people's minds and becomes your sort of signature thing. I couldn't always do the rope entrance because sometimes there wasn't any place to do it or the balcony was too high. As I say, I'm not out to kill myself. And then also as the 20th century rolled on towards its conclusion, places got more and more concerned about insurance, you know, and being sued for something and everything. So sometimes they wouldn't let me do it. But usually I got to do it. And as a matter of fact, places like Carnegie Hall and a couple of other theaters in the country actually let me several times swing down from the first balcony like Tarzan onto the stage, which has got to be the more spectacular classical concert entrance anywhere. It had the advantage for me in that it was so scary that it made the rest of the concert seem like a piece of cake. You know, where in an old theater like Carnegie, the balconies wrap around to the wall where the proscenium is. So it was not from the back of the hall, but from the front of the balcony there, where it's nearest to the stage. They'd hook up a rope up in the flies above the stage, and I'd swing down, and we'd usually leave a music stand or two for me to take out when I came down. And there's, as a matter of fact, on one of the, there are two P.D.Q. Bach, you know, best of collections, one Vanguard and one Telarc. But in the booklet for one of those, it has a great picture of that entrance with swinging down like Tarzan.
This is Peter Schickele's Bassoon Concerto, written in 1998. Soloist George Sacchichini is joined by the Oberlin Orchestra and conductor Rafael Jimenez on What's New. Rafael Jimenez led the Oberlin Orchestra with soloist George Sacchichini playing the Bassoon Concerto by Peter Schickele. The CD has music by Schickele, Augusta Reed Thomas, Libby Larson, and Russell Platt, available from Oberlin Music. You can find out more at WBAA.org, including playlists and podcasts. I asked Peter Schickele about his amazing sounds and orchestration.
It's something that actually it took me sort of, I think, a fairly long time to really sort of work out. In other words, what I mean by that is I was writing music I like. I would say that there's very little music that I've kept in my catalog from before my college years. There are a few pieces, but not many. But my first orchestral pieces, I felt, sounded, they just didn't sound enough like me. They didn't sound like my personality enough. But over the years, I've gradually sort of worked that out. And sometimes doing an unusual orchestration helps sort of inspire the sound. I just had a clarinet concerto premiered. And since it was a clarinet concerto, the conductor and I were talking about it, and I wanted to do an orchestra that wasn't a regular orchestra with pairs of winds, and I mean, it's a chamber orchestra, so pairs of winds and the standard thing. And I started getting ideas for thinking about clarinet as an instrument, as a part of the Dixieland ensemble. So I decided I wanted trumpet and trombone, but not necessarily all the other woodwinds. And it ended up being orchestrated for just trumpet, trombone, and horn. I put a horn in there. And then piano, celesta, and harp, and a lot of percussion, which I also love to use. Not necessarily... Sometimes when you say percussion, people think, oh, loud. No, I'm talking about the vibraphone and the marimba. I love marimba. I love it as a background, a chordal background for a melody. Anyway, that resulted in a sound all its own, not having flutes, oboes, clarinets, or bassoon, except for the solo clarinet. Just another thing to sort of answer your question in terms of orchestration is that I have never written a piece, as some composers do, where you write it on a sort of a full piano score, I mean more than a pianist could actually play, and then orchestrate it. Many great composers have done that. I think that's the way Prokofiev worked, I think. But it doesn't mean you don't have any ideas of who's going to play it, but you write it on a short score and then orchestrate it. I always orchestrate as I go along. And it doesn't mean I might not change my mind, but the orchestration is just an inherent part of the composition to me, and I find it hard to separate them.
In 1995, Peter Schickele's Oboe Concerto was premiered. Let's hear it with Pamela Pekka, the Moscow Philharmonic, and Paul Freeman conducting on What's New. Peter Schickele's Oboe Concerto featured soloist Pamela Pekka, the Moscow Philharmonic Orchestra, and Paul Freeman conducting on What's New. I'm your host, John Clare. Find out more at WBAA.org. Oh, Peter, well, happy birthday. It's so nice to talk to you.
Well, thank you. And it's a pleasure, and I'm sure our paths will cross again.
We set them up.
We knock them down.
The music goes round and round and round.
And where does it come out, Jocko?
Glad you asked me that, Prof. The music comes out on...
WTWP! Classical Radio!
And I think the time has come to try and give away some money here.
That's right, Jocko. Now, folks, if you are listening to the Ethelbert Nevin Show this morning, you know what today's classical quickie quiz question is.
And if you weren't listening, well, maybe you'll get lucky.
I've got someone on the line now, and ma'am, if you could just turn your radio down. Yeah, but no. The thing is that when your radio is tuned to the station you're talking to on the phone, you get feed. It's not? Well, could you turn it down anyway? She's going over to turn it down.
What, does she live in the Taj Mahal?
Oh, wait a minute. Here she comes. Okay, what's your name? Yeah, Brenda what? Brenda Tharleson. And where do you live, Brenda? Inkster, one of my favorite towns. Okay, Brenda Tharleson from Inkster, North Dakota. Here is today's classical quickie quiz question. How much would Domenico Scarlatti have weighed on Jupiter? That's right. How much would the 18th century composer Domenico Scarlatti have weighed on the planet Jupiter? That's okay. Take your time.
Blondie, your toenails need cutting.
Hey.
Okay, Brenda, you got it? No, I'm sorry. That is not the correct answer. No, that's how much Alessandro Scarlatti would have weighed on Jupiter. We're talking about the younger one, Domenico.
Too bad, Brenda, but don't worry, all is not lost. Just for talking to us this evening, you are going to receive, absolutely free, a pair of WTWP wall-to-wall Pachelbel Classical coasters. Now, these little beauts are suitable for use with glasses containing hot or cold beverages, and they're just our little way of saying thanks. Thanks, Brenda Tharlson, for talking to... What did you say? Ho, 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 listen to who's calling who a loser. I do, too. Shinola is a shoe polish. Yeah, well, same to you, you old bag. Boy.
Hell hath no fury.
Oh, don't worry about it, Prof. Let's say we get back to some music.
Good idea, Blondie. And I've got a very interesting little tidbit to throw in here. The original first movement of PDQ Bach's choral cantata, Knock Knock. Apparently, PDQ changed his mind later and wrote another first movement, which is the one I used, of course, when I recorded the entire work a while back there. But just for the historical heck of it, here's the original.
Dropping straight down on ya.
From WTWP.
What's New is a production of WBAA Classical, a listener-supported broadcast service of Purdue University. Production assistance from Erica Yon and Kevin Howard. The content director and executive producer is Greg Estraba. I'm your host and producer, John Clare. Thanks for listening to What's New.